تو
چون من یعنی
بازار Iran is associated with many things. If you are into geology, that would be oil oozing out of the land. Iran is among the world's top five in oil reserves. But oil or petroleum is not the only mineral resource that makes the country rich. Copper is among its other riches, as are lead and zinc. Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. In case you didn't know, Iran has over 220 million tons of proven zinc and lead ore reserves. That is significant. But in copper, it has stood among the top 10. What is being done about all that treasure? It can't all stay underground forever. And there are those extracting and producing the minerals. To meet some of them, we made a trek to Zarin Industrial and Mining Group. In 2009, Iran produced 383,000 tons of copper, meaning it had the world's ninth largest reserves of copper at 32.5 million tons. As a matter of fact, the mines at Sarçeşme in Kerman province contain the world's second largest load of copper ore, that is 5% of the world's total in 2009. Iran is one of the most important mineral producers in the world, ranking among 15 major mineral-rich countries. It was estimated to hold some 68 types of minerals, 37 billion tons of proven reserves, and more than 57 billion tons of potential reserves worth $770 billion in 2014. That is not to say mining in Iran has no more work to be done on it. It is still under development, but there are plenty of doers in this country, and plenty more are waiting for further opportunity to arise for their turn at investment. Zarin Group has already arrived at a point to claim we have done what we could. Flotation, or in other words, ore dressing in mineral processing, is a main process of reduction. It is a method used to separate and concentrate ores by altering their surfaces to a hydrophobic or hydrophilic condition. These chemical and physical changes to the surface of minerals are made using materials with different properties, including activators. Now, in working with minerals, the production process is most efficiently carried out in stages. And what a company just cannot do without is its laboratory for pilot tests before going head in with its whole stock. It is literally to avoid the proverbial haste that makes waste. An asset to corporations is their R&D departments. The reason is they perform research for technological development. That is to say, they develop new services or products and improve existing ones, hence elevating the company's industrial standing. Indeed, standard is everything, especially for foreign trade. And Iran's production by far outweighing its domestic use, there is plenty of room for mineral exports from this country. The industry is export-oriented, as a matter of fact, according to Mr. Katkhodayi. Only 80 to 100,000 tons of produced zinc ingots and 50 to 80,000 tons of lead ingots are consumed domestically. And the remaining were exported to target markets in Asia and Europe, going by 2014 and 2015 estimates. The National Iranian Copper Industries Company is one of the largest companies listed on the Tehran Stock Exchange. It was the largest non-oil exporter in Iran in 2010, with exports worth $1.3 billion. All right, everyone, it's time for me to pass it over to my dear friend and colleague out there on the field who has prepared an interesting feature for you. Let's go check it out.
Right now, millions of them are right on your skin, in your mouth, on your teeth, in your gut. They're everywhere. They can control your mind and they can control your mood. You heard me right. I'm talking about bacteria. And as terrifying as that might sound, because, you know, naturally you would think of these microorganisms as harmful little things that cause disease, you shouldn't really panic. You're fine. In fact, there are a lot more good bacteria in our body than bad bacteria.
Bacteria have got a bad reputation, and for good reason. Bacteria can cause pneumonia, meningitis, food poisoning, and a variety of other infections and diseases. These bad bacteria are the reason why we diligently disinfect our hands and wipe down places where germs tend to congregate, and we have not stopped there. To kill these bad microorganisms, we have developed a wide range of antibiotics. But this is not the whole picture. Our bodies are also home to an estimated 100 trillion good bacteria. They are essential to our survival and live in complete harmony with us humans.
It's a symbiotic relationship in which we both benefit, us humans and them good bacteria. It's called mutualism. Think of bees and flowers.
Bees fly from flower to flower to drink the sugary sweet nectar that is made by flowers. While drinking the nectar, bees get some pollen on their hairy bodies, and when they land on the next flower, some of the pollen will rub off their body and pollinate the plant. In this mutualistic relationship, the bees get to eat and the flowering plants get to reproduce. Similarly enough, we help good bacteria eat and thrive, and they in turn help our bodies digest food and absorb nutrients. They are also effective in preventing and treating conditions like obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and inflammations associated with autoimmune diseases.
The bacteria that I'm going to be talking about in this week's feature program are primarily present in our digestive system and in some foods and supplements. You've probably heard their name, probiotics. In order to learn how these probiotic supplements and products are made right here in Iran, I'm visiting a pharmaceutical company called Zistakhmi. Here's more.
Actually, I should go back to around 20 years back when we started to think about probiotics in Iran. At that time, probiotic was a really very low-profile subject in Iran. Nobody or a few people, even the physicians, did know about the benefits of probiotics. We started working in the University of Tehran, working as a thesis of students, and after a few years, we established this company, Zistakhmir, in the incubator center of the College of Pharmacy. And after 5 years, we could manage to establish this prestigious building and production facility outside in the outskirts of Tehran.
This is the storage room that houses a wide variety of raw materials that are used in the manufacturing process. There are various aisles and many shelves here. There's also a map locating everything. But the effective material, microbes, are not and cannot be kept in any ordinary storage room. Certain probiotic strains are stored at extremely low temperatures and in special freezers to avoid any kind of contamination. These microbial strains are then grown. This is called fermentation. At the end of this process, a broth is made, which contains a large number of probiotic organisms. Because this broth is in dilute form, it should be concentrated. That's when centrifugation comes into play and turns the broth into a cream-like substance. The paste is then spray-dried. The production of probiotics is a complex procedure and requires extensive skill and experience. Quality control is essential throughout the whole production process, from raw materials to the final product. This Tachmir is equipped with different laboratories and control rooms to ensure each stage in the production process is systematically controlled, high standards are met, and objectives are pursued.
At the moment, hopefully, Iran is very advanced in terms of probiotic products. I think that at the moment we have around 10 companies which are producing probiotics, and of course, because we have been the first company, we have a main market share comparing to other competitors in this field. So the probiotic industry in Iran is deeply rooted, we don't need any to import any products or intermediate, anything from the outside.
The development of formulations requires extensive research on the best combination of strains. This is an ongoing process that keeps evolving by the day. Various research teams are at work to find new and more effective combinations. Depending on the indication, different probiotic strains are chosen and tested on their compatibility. In addition to the API, active pharmaceutical ingredients, research teams consider including other ingredients in the formulation, namely prebiotics, which are a type of fiber that human body cannot digest but serves as food for probiotics. Back to the clean room. These products are very expensive. Thus, by producing them inside Iran, the country can save a lot of money. And with that, I want to conclude my report of yet another company located in Pardis Technology Park.
And that wraps up our program for today. Stay tuned next week for another edition of Bozor.
Each other, that this day will be the last, and tomorrow, we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثتُ لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
Speech is the mirror of the heart. When the heart is pure, the tongue speaks pure. When the heart is dark, the tongue wounds. Peace and blessings, dear listeners. Welcome once again to you for A Better Life, where the fragrance of wisdom still rises from the gardens of faith and poetry. Today, we walk through one of the most powerful gifts Allah has granted humankind, speech. With a single word, you can build or destroy, comfort or wound, guide or mislead. The tongue, though small, carries the weight of the soul. As Sa'di says, a gentle word is like spring rain upon dry soil, but a sharp tongue burns the heart like fire. Speech reveals who we truly are. You can wear fine clothes, hide your intentions, or smile politely, but the moment you speak, your heart becomes visible. Sa'di wrote, "A man's worth lies beneath his tongue, not above his head." And Imam Ali alayhi salam expressed it beautifully. The tongue of a man is one half of him, and the other half is his heart. Our words are not separate from our faith. They are our faith in motion. Allah says in the Holy Book of Quran, "Speak kindly to people, and speak to them a noble word. And most powerfully, not a word does one utter, except that there is an angel ready to record it." Every sentence we say, every whisper, every comment online, it is written. Our speech becomes the architecture of our destiny. Silence, too, is a language, the voice of wisdom. Sa'di once wrote, "The wise are silent not because they have nothing to say, but because they know the time and value of saying it." Imam Ali alayhi salam had said, "When your words are heavier than your silence, speak. When your silence is wiser than your words, remain quiet." And in the book of Nahjul Balagha, he warned, "The tongue is like a lion. If you let it loose, it may wound someone." Now, in our age of social media, speech has multiplied, but wisdom has not. People type what they would never say aloud. They argue, accuse, and mock, forgetting that digital words also reach the hearts. Sa'di would have grieved at this. He wrote, "Do not throw stones with your tongue, for hearts bleed invisibly. The believer must measure speech, not to suppress truth, but to deliver it with mercy." The Messenger of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, had said, The most perfect believer is the one who is best in speech and character. He never raised his voice in anger. He never humiliated his soul with words. Even when faced with insult, he answered with calmness and dignity. Now, once a man insulted the prophet repeatedly. The companions wanted to attack, but the prophet said softly, "Leave him. His words are a reflection of him, not of me." So every marriage, friendship, and family bond is held together or torn apart by words. A kind phrase can heal a heart. A harsh one can scar for years. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam had said, "The believer is not he who fasts and prays much, but he whose tongue is safe for others." So before we speak, we must ask ourselves, is this word true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? Is it the word said by a Muslim? Now, Sa'di tells of a king who insulted a beggar for his smell and torn clothes. The beggar smiled and replied, "O king, the earth will one day embrace both of us. Your perfume will fade and my dirt will become dust alike." The king was silent, ashamed. Sa'di wrote, "A word spoken with truth can humble the proud. A word spoken with cruelty can destroy the kind." Imam Ali alayhi salam had mentioned the tongue as both the sweetness and the most poisonous thing in a man. It can be means to paradise through prayer and encouragement, or it can be the path to destruction through gossip, mockery, and lies. This is why the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had said, "Whoever guarantees me what is between his jaws and his legs, I will guarantee him paradise." Now let's go for a very short break, and then we're going to be back by some practical steps towards changing our mindset to the ways that we talk, to the way that we behave, and to the way that our tongue is affecting our behavior.
Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Now let's reflect on five golden principles for ethical speech in Islam and on our daily lives with wisdom. The first one might be speaking truthfully. Truth is light, falsehood darkens the heart. So once we know that we're being honest with the other people, this might be the first step toward having the correct Islamic way of talking. The other way is speaking kindly. If truth can be told gently, it will reach deeper. The other way can be speaking with purpose. Idle talk wastes the breath of life, and avoiding backbiting. The Quran likens it to eating the flesh of your dead brother. And the other technique might be keeping silent when angry. Silence is the bridge between emotions and reason. Now, Sa'di Shirazi, the Persian prose writer and poet, again wrote, "A kind word can melt the iron of hatred. Harshness can freeze even the warmth of love." So next time you're tempted to answer sharply, pause and choose softness. Gentle words echo longer than loud ones. Even, I think, in our own life, if we look at our memories, look at the memories that we have with the teachers, with the people around us, as a child even, we remember those moments that a person was teaching us something, or was helping us, or even found us guilty in a situation, but with the kind words started to change our mindset. A teacher who didn't shout at us the time that we couldn't understand. The parent who helped us doing something though we were supposed to be able to, but we couldn't. Or even those friends who were always there for us, supporting us and giving us that positive energy. See, these moments had stuck in our mind. So in this way, we can learn that our words can be the memories in the minds of the other people as well. Now, every salam that we say is worship. Every goodbye is a prayer. The simplest word, if said with sincerity, carry divine fragrance. Even silence can be a form of remembrance when the heart is speaking to Allah while the tongue rests. Sa'di ends one of his stories saying, "If you cannot speak good, be silent, for silence too is a kind of speech. Now, dear listeners, in the garden of faith, every word is a seed. Some grow into flowers, others into thorns. The choice is ours. Let us plant words that heal, that comfort, that inspire. Let us silence the tongue when it becomes heavier than truth. And remember, speech is not only communication, it is creation. Every word you speak shapes the world around you. As Saadi Shirazi whispers through time, words are arrows. Once released, they do not return. So speak lightly, speak love, and speak faith. And as we're closing today's episode, dear hearts, I say with warmth and prayer, may your words bring peace to those you meet, and may your silence carry wisdom to the heavens. And may our minds, see, when we are talking about our words, we usually go back and refer to the heart, but not necessarily. May our minds be that awakened and that aware that will control us in the moments that we are angry, in the moment that we want to have the sharp answer and feel good at the moment. May our minds remember that we're still a Muslim, that we still carry the heavy responsibility of those great role models. We may not be the exact copy of them, like our great prophet, but at least we're claiming to be the followers of his way. So may our heart understand the value of silence when it is required, and may our mind understand the value of being aware and awakened in those sharp moments that we want an answer to just feel like we have been answering to the other people. Sometimes not answering can be the true reaction of a Muslim. Sometimes our kind, gentle, and generous answer will be the lifesaver of others. So with all these great remembrance and with these wishes, I wish you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there. Be there.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
As Israel's deadly onslaught in Gaza continues, any notion of a ceasefire exists in name only, according to Francesca Albanese. The UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories told a European Parliament hearing on Tuesday via video link that relatively few countries have stood up for Palestinians.
The rest have been bending backward and forward to comply with the diktat of the United States, including European countries and European Union.
Albanese is scathing about the US-driven plan for Gaza's future, especially the reconstruction proposals.
The reconstruction plan not only is wrong as it's planned, because it's planned without the Palestinians and while the bombing and the shooting and the starving are still ongoing, but also because Gaza is a crime scene.
Several lawmakers expressed anger that Palestinians are not being placed at the center of discussions about Gaza's future.
It's so striking, the current EU reaction to the 28-point plan regarding Ukraine, where the EU very clearly said there's no plan without the Ukrainians.
Once again, fresh calls were made for the EU to halt all trade with the Israeli regime. There have been any number of debates and events in the European Parliament relating to the plight of Palestinians, but they effectively come to nothing. This is because any potential sanctions don't even get as far as here, the EU Council, and that is because the European Commission knows they'll be blocked by certain member states.
Analysts argue that the EU has now taken a back seat on foreign policy, with the United States firmly in control.
I mean, the whole situation with the European Union in the Middle East now, it's clear there is no vision in Europe, there is no policy, at least no coherent policy.
Some legislators support Albanese's call for dual EU-Israeli nationals to be investigated upon re-entering the bloc, a measure previously applied to suspected foreign fighters returning from Daesh-controlled areas.
Was immediately, oh, this is a potential terrorist because he was fighting in the Middle East, and now it's completely silenced. I mean, the right wing, although they always talk about security and how to watch the borders so that no terrorists come inside, now they receive with open hands.
Albanese told the committee that the EU should suspend all ties with Israel except those required to enforce international court rulings against Tel Aviv. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Braving the autumn chill, people across Indian-administered Kashmir gathered in large numbers on Tuesday to mark the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, the revered daughter of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. The Tuesday event concluded week-long ceremonies in Kashmir and the neighboring border area of Kargil, which featured religious gatherings, scholarly conferences and mourning processions to honor Hazrat Fatima.
Hazrat Fatima exemplifies the highest standards of behavior as a daughter, wife and mother. Her life stands as a timeless model of virtue for every generation. Although she lived only 18 years, her spiritual closeness to God earned her the title of Leader of the Women of Paradise.
Mourners emphasize that Hazrat Fatima's immense contribution to Islam is often overlooked, particularly in the West due to persistent misconceptions about women's rights and status in Islamic tradition.
Islam uniquely advocates gender equality and firmly protects women's rights. In an era where society increasingly commodifies women, the teachings and example of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, are more relevant than ever, offering a complete model of dignity and respect. Her moral integrity, humility and devotion make her unique among all women.
Speakers recalled Prophet Muhammad's profound love for his daughter, affection that directly challenged the norms of pre-Islamic Arabia, where daughters were frequently devalued.
Hazrat Fatima possessed qualities beyond description. She was a divine personality and a fountainhead of guidance and piety. Our holy prophet's love and respect for his daughter was so profound that it would stand up in her honor. Her unwavering defense of justice and rightful leadership reflects her commitment to truth, integrity, and the rights of the oppressed.
The speakers urged people to study Hazrat Fatima's life more deeply and draw inspiration from her patience, piety, and unwavering faith, saying her legacy remains a guiding light for Muslim women and a model of steadfastness and spiritual excellence.
As Kashmir joined the global Muslim community in remembering Hazrat Fatima Zahra, scholars and participants describe her as a timeless role model whose humility, strength and devotion continue to guide Muslims across generations. Sayyidri Safir, Indian Administered Kashmir.
We
Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Larajani, arrived in Pakistan on Monday. His visit marks a significant step in the ongoing efforts by both countries to consolidate cooperation amid heightened regional tensions. Shortly after his arrival, Larajani met Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, President Asif Ali Zardari, Deputy Prime Minister Ishaq Dar, and other high-ranking officials and think tank heads, engaging in wide-ranging discussions on bilateral ties and regional security. The discussions focused on expanding bilateral trade, with both sides reiterating their commitment to removing trade barriers, activating the barter trade mechanism, and expediting the Pakistan-Iran Free Trade Agreement. Larajani also praised Pakistan's support for Iran during the U.S.-Israeli aggression against the country earlier this year.
We discussed all key bilateral matters, especially how to expand our economic cooperation and strengthen trade. Pakistan is a true brotherly nation, and together we explored practical ways to deepen our security ties, enhance people-to-people contact, and coordinate our positions on major international issues.
Pakistani leadership underscored Islamabad's commitment to deepening political, economic, and security cooperation with Tehran.
We discussed all the regional, bilateral, and global issues. It was a wonderful meeting. I'm grateful to my brother Excellency for his visit and sparing time to meet with me. And we had very open discussion about all the issues which are currently being faced by the regional and the multilateral forums.
Observers say Larajani's visit signals a strategic recalibration in Iran's regional engagement after the June war with Israel. They say the visit also underscores Pakistan's rising relevance in Tehran's long-term vision, particularly in border security, regional trade, and balanced diplomacy in a volatile neighborhood.
We are proud of Iran's resistance. They have set a new example because they have shattered the myth of Israeli invincibility through the determination, through the will, and the fighting power of the Iranian nation. And we feel that Iran showed that imperialism, hegemony, Zionism, they say might is right, right is might. And they failed miserably in that.
Larajani is the second high-ranking Iranian official to visit Pakistan this month, after Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bakar Kalibaf.
The latest high-level meetings between the top officials of Iran and Pakistan show that the two neighbors are not only focused on boosting trade and economic partnerships, but also on developing coordinated mechanisms for regional peace and security. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Thanks to Trump, European Commission insiders say an atmosphere of fear and uncertainty continues to hang over EU-US trade relations. Meeting on Monday, EU trade ministers agreed the bloc must broaden its commercial horizons and seek additional stable partners.
What we are working on continuously, that we have to diversify our trade. The commissioner gave us a state on ongoing negotiations with India and a number of other countries and regions in Asia, Middle East and Africa.
It emerged at Monday's meeting, attended by senior White House officials, that the EU has already paid €173 billion for US energy imports this year, much of it for costly liquefied natural gas shipped across the Atlantic. Those charges filter through industry and ultimately onto consumers. It's a stark contrast to the much cheaper Russian gas that once powered the EU. The head of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, struck a deal with Trump at his golf course in Scotland last July. He had been threatening 50% US tariffs on all EU imports, but in the end they settled on a baseline 15% levy. Now Washington officials are annoyed at the EU over its slow implementation of that deal. Punishing 50% US tariffs on EU steel and aluminium remain firmly in place. The current trade arrangements have drawn sharp criticism from inside the European Parliament.
Trump is the worst bully in the schoolyard. He picks on everyone. You should never give in to blackmail. The more money we promise to pour into the US, the more they will demand from us.
EU citizens are equally scathing of the current US administration.
I think it's just right now a pause maybe before, I know, like maybe then Trump decides to impose tariffs again or to increase them on us. And plus right now with the Ukraine plan, again, like the recently disclosed Ukraine plan is going to be other tensions as well.
If Vance is taking the place of Trump because he's talking about that now, I think it's even more dangerous. And in a way, even if they go back and they will be less rude in a few years, I think the tune is set, if we can say this in English. I think it's very dangerous. Yeah, I think so.
Government leaders are being accused of surrendering far too much ground to Trump on trade, leaving millions of already struggling EU businesses and households to shoulder the cost. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Italian prosecutors will have to decide whether to put the suspects, who today are between 65 and 80 years old, on trial. They are suspected of voluntary murder aggravated by cruelty and abject motives, a crime which has no statute of limitations and carries a maximum life sentence. Some political analysts believe that the whole Sarajevo sniper tourism affair can also be read through the lens of geopolitics. They suspect that there are governments who are trying to link Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić to the so-called sniper safaris that took place in Bosnia in the 1990s.
The risk that this affair is turned into a political tool clearly exists. Some may be eager to find political implications in these murders, but they would be wrong. Those were just criminal acts.
I think it could well be politicized because the information that we have at the moment is very murky indeed, and no concrete details are being given as to what is actually being investigated. Neither the numbers, nor the people involved, nor the countries involved.
During the Rome press conference, Gavazzeni also pointed out that Italy's military intelligence agency was aware of the abominable trips when they took place, but nothing was done to stop them. Max Civili, Rome.
Next to the conscientious objector's commemorative stone, a demonstration rooted in conscience. Demonstrators, some from other parts of Europe, defying the elements and threats of arrest, holding placards that have become symbols of nonviolent action.
What people here are doing and what the widespread wave of civil disobedience that we've started with Defend Our Juries is against the prescription of Palestine Action. And that prescription, which is now being challenged in the High Court next week, is basically what we're arguing, that it is unjust, it's immoral, and it should have never happened. And it is really a breach of everyone's civil liberties. It is really an attack on democracy.
Before long come the arrests. Since these protests first began in the summer, British police have arrested more than 2,000, charging hundreds under terror laws in a move the demonstrators say is to stifle dissent against the UK's complicity in Israel's genocidal war on Palestinians.
They've attempted to use terrorism legislation to remove from all public discourse the one body of people in this country who, as citizens, have stood up and put their bodies on the line to materially interrupt an economic, military, and diplomatic collaboration in genocide.
Palestine Action was prescribed by former Home Secretary Yvette Cooper in June this year. Membership of or support for the group is punishable by up to 14 years in prison.
The government is complicit in the genocide in Gaza, and they will do anything to criminalize any resistance against it, including old people sat with signs saying, "I oppose genocide."
In an unprecedented move in British history, Palestine Action is challenging its prescription in this court starting November 25th in the form of a judicial review.
If the High Court votes in favor of Palestine Action, the thousands of arrests and the hundreds of charges that were brought against demonstrators like these under the Terrorism Act of 2000 will also be quashed.
A victory for Palestine Action would also have repercussions for its jailed members, six of whom are now on an open-ended hunger strike in prisons across Britain. Cyprus, London.
Israel has struck a residential building in the heart of the Beirut suburbs. The third and fourth floors of a nine-story building were badly damaged, with debris filling the road, damaging cars and property. Deputy head of Hezbollah Political Bureau confirmed to Press TV that a senior commander was targeted in the strike.
This is an attempted assassination, targeting a key leader within the resistance. What matters now is that we document this as a clear act of aggression, an escalation we cannot and will not tolerate. It is our responsibility at the national level to establish a response that confronts Israel's attempt to undermine our sovereignty.
Although the Israeli statement said the target was a commander in the resistance, people near the scene say Israeli strikes are targeting everyone.
I am from this neighborhood. Every time they come up with this claim that they are targeting a member of the resistance, we are all members of the resistance. I want to tell our prime minister, who was a judge in the international court, if your diplomacy can't protect us and solve our crisis, then leave us to be and don't speak in our name. And this mechanism is obviously biased towards Israel.
Alice believes the Israeli claims that Hezbollah has rehabilitated is merely preparing the ground for a larger escalation and a U.S. green light for this aggression.
This marks a new level of violation, and there are two potential outcomes. Either the resistance retaliates, which would escalate into a full-scale war, or they absorb this blow, which could embolden Israel to carry out further strikes. Both options are devastating. This is a turning point. With Israel seeking to normalize its escalation in Lebanon, backed by U.S. support, and with the Lebanese government failing to take action.
President Joseph Aoun called on the international community to intervene firmly to stop Israeli attacks on the country. Lebanon, he said, reiterates its call to the international community to assume its responsibility and intervene firmly and seriously to stop the attacks on Lebanon and its people. The Israeli strike on the southern suburbs of Beirut and the U.S. blessing are considered part of the growing pressure by both sides to enforce full surrender by Hezbollah and full compliance of the Lebanese government to disarm the resistance. However, many believe that this opens the way for different scenarios, especially if the resistance decides it is time to retaliate. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
good day to all of you, our listeners. This is Iran Radio. It's nice to have you with us, and I'm your host for the next hour. Here are some interesting facts about Holy Quran. Considered to be a verbal revelation by Allah, this is the actual word of Allah. The Quran is the holiest book for Muslims. Literally meaning, the recitation of the Quran is widely regarded as the finest work in classical Arabic literature. Although the entire holy book plays a significant role in the daily rituals of its followers, the first surah, known as Surah Fatiha, is the most recited of the Holy Quran. The surah, which consists of 7 verses, is repeated in daily prayers of Muslims and on other occasions. Now we'll listen to the translation of this holy surah. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, praised be Allah, Lord of the two worlds, this world and the hereafter, the beneficent, the merciful, and master of the day of judgment. You alone we do worship, and from you alone we do seek assistance. Guide us to the right path, the path of those to whom you have granted blessings, those who are neither subject to your anger nor have gone astray. We start off this hour's programs with our news bulletin. That will be followed by Islamic upbringing. The program aims to answer frequently asked questions regarding children and adolescents and their upbringing. Our radio productions feature will be our final program this hour. Stay with us.
It's too late.
If you haven't spoken up yet, it might be too late for you. This is your call to say something and not let history judge you for what you should have done.
There once was a day when we were shadows in the street, paper thin excuses crumbling at our feet. Screens glowed brightly, selling fear and doubt. The truth bled quietly, seldom spoken out. But today it's on the news again that the Zionist entity has murdered Palestinians and burned their city. Savagery is in their blood, genocide their game. The world is watching live as they enter the hall of shame. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history for what we should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late. America gives the go-ahead, then it sends in bombs. Israel calls it self-defense and murders without qualms. Since when has killing children become a source of pride? Silence must be broken if you want to turn the tide. It's time we made the right choice, our lives may be on the line. It's time we raised our voice, chanting free, free Palestine. The police can do what they want to do, detain one or two. But thousands of millions are coming through, a move they cannot undo. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history for what we should.
should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too late. Oh, it's too
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: the Israeli regime has launched new airstrikes on the Gaza Strip in violation of a ceasefire agreement with the Hamas movement. Iran's UN ambassador has written a letter to the Security Council saying that the country reserves the right to pursue all legal avenues to hold the U.S. and Israel accountable for the 12-day aggression. And Iran's foreign minister says a prisoner exchange with France has been finalized and will take place soon. Hello and welcome, everybody. This is World News. The Israeli military is pressing ahead with its relentless deadly strikes on the Gaza Strip despite the ceasefire agreement. Israeli warplanes carried out air